Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 17th of April. The State of the News Media in 2008, an annual report on American journalism this hour of the program. Our guest is Amy Mitchell, Deputy Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. In the fall of 2007, the project, along with the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press, surveyed over 500 journalists about the state of their profession and also their attitudes toward the future. A cross-section of national and local reporters, editors, and executives, and the survey builds off a similar one that was conducted in 2004, State of the News Media. It finds clear shifts in the major concerns, the areas of strength, and the broad values voiced by those surveyed. The report examined newspaper, online, network TV, cable TV, local TV, magazines, radio, and ethnic. The overall finding that the state of the American news media in 2008 is more troubled than a year ago, and the problems increasingly appear to be different than many experts predicted. It's a very, very thorough report, and they find that more and more the biggest problem facing traditional media has less to do with where people get information than how to pay for it. They look at what's happened to newspapers. They look at the stories that dominated the headlines during the last year. There were two stories, and why it is that we could say that the news agenda was defined almost as much by what wasn't covered as what was. We're going to have a lot to talk about with Amy, and we'll welcome your phone calls as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hello, Amy. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with this general statement that the overall finding is the state of the American news media is more troubled than a year ago. How is that?
Well, what's been realized in the last year is that, as you stated in your introduction remarks, that the bigger problem is not one of audience, that in many ways the media have found a way to get audience and to create content that fits the needs of the audiences today. But what they haven't figured out yet, and the problem that's facing them through 2008 and beyond, is one of finances, is how to pay for this news.
And a lot of the problem, at least for newspapers, is classified advertising, right? It's gone way down. Why is that?
Well, that's one of the first areas. It was sort of the first thing to be affected as kind of the democratization of the news and the process of the flow of information took off. One of the areas that affected people the most was classified ads, because that's what is the individual, the person. And it was easy to create online places for local classified advertising and to connect people that wanted to sell or buy things. And that was a big part of newspaper revenues. What we're seeing now, though, is that it's moved much beyond that. Classifieds are just the first part of this, and that there's a bigger decoupling, if you will, of advertising and news, and that while audiences have moved online, the money hasn't moved with it. Nobody has found a way to create the right economic model online, and there's a very good chance that the bulk of the online revenue is not going to be something that comes directly from advertising the way it worked in the old model. What you have now online is a new opportunity for advertisers to reach people without news. They don't need news as much as they did in the old model. That Nike can have its own website, can reach people directly without going through the NBC Evening News or the local newspaper or whatever other element they used to reach their audiences in the past.
Do people pay attention to the ads that are on online?
Well, evidence of this, early sort of data that's been gathered, suggests that certain types of advertising has a better impact on people. They're more likely to watch. Video ads are much more likely to be watched than are the kind of pop-up ads, the display ads that we see on sites. Those tend to just irritate people. Whereas if you have something laid into a video, like you do on in television, people are sort of used to sitting through that. It seems to work better.
One part of the report says this, and this hurts those of us who read daily newspapers all the time. 5 years hence, it may make sense to look at pulling the plug on print and rolling the dice on getting readers and advertisers to follow to a web-only format.
Yeah, it's, it is heartbreaking in some ways to think about it. But what newspapers are facing now is this kind of split in the newsroom where the bulk of their energy and the sort of how we're going to put up content and the kind of content we're going to create is centered around their web product, how it's going to go online, what can we add to it. And there is a lot of sort of advancement, new ideas there, a lot of creative energy. And the secondary component is this thing we print each day. That's sort of the place for record. It comes out. It's kind of after the fact. But it's still the bulk of their revenue. So it's the afterthought, but it's also where they get the most of their money. So, you know, the ability to move online is dependent upon finding a way to make some money there.
Mm-hmm. And also, it's my understanding that a lot of the investigative reporters who have done terrific work for newspapers, many newspapers in this country, don't exist very much online, that a lot of online reporting is really coming from newspapers.
Yeah. I mean, some of that is investigative reporters working for newspapers. But in many ways, if you look at where people are getting their information from as they move online, more so than ever, they're getting it from these traditional news sources, primarily newspaper reporting, than they did before the Internet existed. The traditional news sites command a greater percent of the total audience online that's getting news than they commanded in their traditional platforms, newspapers, et cetera. And part of this has to do with these newer online-only entities, whether it's Yahoo or others, who thought at one point, "Hey, we're gonna produce our own news." You know, Yahoo, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, started hiring sort of a news reporting people that were going to do original reporting for them. You know, bylined by Yahoo
right.
staff. It hasn't gone anywhere, and they've stopped almost all of it because it's really hard, and it costs money. So it was more efficient for most of these places to use the reporting that's already being done by people that are skilled and are set up to do this. And so more and more we find these types of aggregators and user news sites and things like that, even blogs that are linking to or using the original reporting done by newspapers and others in the traditional media as their starting point. And then they go from there.
And yet when you look at that original reporting, your report also cites the fact that a lot of traditional media didn't cover the world last year. They covered some U.S. Interests abroad, but there were only two countries other than Iraq that received notable coverage, Iran and Pakistan.
Right. One of the things we're finding is that the agenda is actually narrowing rather than broadening. And this whole idea that, you know, the Internet, you know, was going to give us the opportunity to learn about a much wider world is not what's happening. But the challenge here that the news industry is facing is that they're having to come up with a new economic model at the same time that they're having to cut back on their resources for their current model. So even if newspapers want to try things online or network news or cable news, this isn't only about newspapers, they're being forced to cut back their resources, their reporting resources in-house because of the declines in audience and economics that they're facing on their root media, if you will, their traditional original media outlet. So there are fewer people to do the work. And they're trying to report more. And in newspapers, we saw in 2007 a movement to first say, okay, we're going to get rid of our international reporting and pretty much rely on the wires and other people to give us our international news. This is, you know, sort of, you know, big metro and smaller papers. And then they started doing that for national news as well and said, okay, well, we're going to just be hyper-local. We're going to really report our neighborhood, and this might be the kind of the big city papers, you know, the St. Louis Post or the that have a pretty big area to cover. And what they learned was that it was actually harder in some ways to try to be hyper-local and more expensive because there are so many little communities to report on.
Mm-hmm.
And those little communities now have their own gathering places for news. They have their neighborhood listservs. They have the real small local weekly paper that comes out that covers what's going on in the high school and at the neighborhood market. And to try to get to that level of intimacy in a metro paper was really expensive to do. So they then started rethinking this. Well, maybe we should, you know, not be hyper-local, get rid of the hyper-local and, you know, go back to international. We'll see. But it's definitely a challenge with the smaller workforce you have to do the job combined with the need to have constant updating.
Mm-hmm. And you note that those smaller papers you just mentioned that don't have a lot of direct competition that talk about the high school football games, et cetera, are still doing relatively well.
Yes, they are. And the you know, what we're seeing in the behavior at the public is people that get their very, very local weekly paper and then go someplace for their national news. And sort of that mid-level of news is what's getting lost.
Mm-hmm. What about the media and the public disagreeing about what stories are important? What isn't being covered that we think should be?
Well, it was interesting to look at sort of the comparison. One of the areas that the public wanted more of were kind of these bread and butter issues, education, environment, you know, things that connected to them that might be a national story, healthcare, but also impacted them at a very personal level. And that we're not seeing a lot of, you know, newspapers did more of that for the most part than other types of media, but it's a pretty small percentage of the overall coverage that they give throughout the year. Another area where, as you mentioned earlier, there was very little coverage was international news, you know, aside from the Iraq War and a couple of other, you know, very big items in the, during the year. But the public kind of said they didn't really want a lot of that. So, you know, there's a bit of a sort of a question mark there in terms of, you know, the responsibility of the press to cover these things. And, you know, the public may be saying, well, we don't want to spend so much of our time reading about Pakistan or China. We want to know about our what's going to affect us locally.
What about these stories, and I'm wondering who's covering them? They certainly find some place. I don't know if it's on network television, and I know you've studied this, or cable news or tabloids. What about these stories that are just so distracting and so trashy and so not worth our while, Paris Hilton and all those other people?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We did a very close look at the coverage of the death of Anna Nicole Smith, which was back in February of 07. And it was kind of interesting because, you know, there was a sense that the coverage was everywhere. You couldn't look anywhere without
right,
seeing her
yeah.
face. And, you know, what was going on? It was like, oh, my gosh, that's just all-consuming. And when we looked closer, we found that indeed that was the case on cable TV. You know, more than 50% of their coverage during the time of sort of her death was taken up by Anna Nicole Smith, which is really incredible. But the other media were actually more restrained than sort of initially came across, and they didn't dive into it and get consumed by it at all the way that cable did. And so that, you know, there is a sense of some kind of pulling back of this kind of celebrity tabloid-style reporting outside of cable news.
Mm-hmm. What about what's happening within newsrooms? We hear, and I come from a family of newspaper people, the number of consolidations there have been, the number of layoffs there have been in major newspapers all over the country. It's a profession that's losing its professionals.
Mm-hmm. One news professional described it as, you know, we're no longer, you know, talking about an illness here, and it's just amputation. Mm. We're just losing limbs left and right. And I was just at the big conference of the year of American newspaper editors that takes place once a year. And, well, there's this, there's a lot of excitement and energy over the possibilities of what the web can bring. And that's new. That didn't exist a year ago. A year ago, it was still kind of feared, you know, what would this do to us?
Right.
So while there's that excitement, there's a just this quick response of, but we're not going to have anybody to do it. Unless we figure it out really quickly, we're not going to have anybody left to do this. You know, indeed, we just see layoff after layoff and buyout after buyout. And, you know, there's not an end in sight. And that, you know, it comes back to this question of an economic model you know, that needs to be figured out. And whether it ends up being the sort of the traditional media joining together and saying, you, the news aggregator, or you, the internet provider, are going to have to pay us to carry us the way that kind of works in cable TV. You know, whether it's that or some other model, it's got to be, energy has got to be put there and resources, or there's going to have been so much cutting that there's, you know, it's going to be hard to do the reporting job, even if the opportunity exists.
And is what you just mentioned the likely model?
Well, it's something that's been talked about. I mean, if you think about the way cable news works, you know, we pay our cable provider,
right.
Comcast, or, you know,
whoever. We pay them
locally.
A lot of money, too.
Yeah, sure do, and then you never look at it. You know, you just sort of, you know, pay it each month without kind of looking at the total and think, hey, boy, I'm paying them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that money you pay is going to Fox News. It's going to ESPN. I mean, you know, you may never go to that channel, but you're paying for that access, and so, you know, it's called subscriber revenues, and the cable networks get a fair amount of their money from these subscriber revenues that come through the monthly bills that we get. Nothing like that exists, you know, for the online industry. And if there was a way, now that we see that aggregators and other online news providers are dependent upon the reporting from traditional media, whether there's a way to monetize that, to challenge, you know, them a little bit and sort of put your foot down and say, you know, you got to give us something for this. We're not just going to put all this out for free. There are two big obstacles, though. The first is that there's such a plethora of reporting that there'd really need to be a banding together. It would be something that would have to be done sort of as a group, you know, across the board. And that's like, you know, that's a difficult thing to try to bring together. And the other is that's the way cable began. Nobody had access to anything on cable before they had to start paying, you know, before the system was set up. Right now, everybody already has the information. Everybody has access to everything. And so it has to be a backwards motion, a stop, and a pulling back, and sort of trying to recreate a new model when everybody's already used to getting stuff for free and not paying anything for it. So it's kind of a, you know, it goes against the flow of the way things would be created. But when you look at all the other options out there, it certainly is one that it sort of logically makes the most sense in terms of, you know, supply and demand.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for Amy. We already have a couple coming in, and we welcome more of your calls. Amy Mitchell is Deputy Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, and I highly recommend you go to their website because they have done such a thorough examination of the state of the news in 2008. They look at radio and television and cable and newspapers and what all of those outlets have covered during the last year, and what's happening to jobs in the business and how to pay for all of this, where we're getting our news, the kind of news that we would like to be getting that we're not getting. This is all covered in this very major report. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee, or send an email if you'd like. That address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls, and we'll take them in a moment. The second hour of the program, we'll look at the air quality in Beijing. As you know, Chinese authorities are trying to improve air quality for the upcoming Olympic Games by ordering factory and construction shutdowns in Beijing. There already have been. The world's actually greatest distance runner has said that because of his health, he has chosen not to participate in the Games. We will be talking with a doctor who deals with people with asthma, and we will deal with conversation with a woman who is the track coach for the women's Olympic team. So that should be an interesting conversation, second hour of the program. Let's go to your phone calls now for Amy Mitchell. Amy is Deputy Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, and we start our calls with Rick from La Crosse. Hi, Rick.
Hi, good morning. I beg to differ. I think that the main problem with the media in the United States specifically is a loss of trust on the part of the public, and the media's servility to power, their concern with access, you know, careful not to upset the powerful. An example of this was when Samantha Power story was broke. It was a British journalist that was interviewing Samantha Power. And Samantha Power, tripped up, you know, when she called Hitler a monster. You know, she's the campaign advisor, was the campaign advisor for Obama. She tripped up and she called Hillary a monster, and then, oops, excused herself and said, "This is confidential, off the record." And the British journalist had no, intention of the interview, wouldn't have taken up the interview if it had been confidential, and they don't do that in England. And she was, this British reporter was being interviewed by Tucker Carlson, and Carlson just excoriated the British journalist for doing what they do in England, breaking stories without any compunction about upsetting the powerful. And Glenn Greenwald of Salon points this, finally, the truth is out. You know, concern with access is more important than the news, you know. And besides, when I want to get a media analysis, I go to Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. I go to MediaMatters.org. I go to Project Censored. I think those are great organizations that really point out what the problem is with American media. And American media is losing trust. People are going elsewhere, reading outside the United States, other publications like Guardian, The Observer, it's wonderful because, you know, the Internet really liberated us from the Pravda-esque media here in the U.S., and I love the Internet because of that.
Amy?
Well, I think he makes a couple of good points. You know, certainly there has been a growing decline in public trust about the media, with, you know, slight majorities of people saying that they don't trust the media. But at the same time, you have a much greater percentage saying they don't trust what comes out from bloggers as being true and accurate. And, you know, more people trust the media than trust Congress or, you know, other areas that they're asked about. But, you know, it's also true that the Internet has held up a mirror and put the press to much greater scrutiny than they were in the past in terms of people being able to call them on things and look closely at where their information's coming from and spread the word very, very quickly if an error is found. You know, the ability to have something spread virally through the Internet is incredible. And I think journalists feel that constantly, that new pressure that somebody else is watching and somebody else is doing some of this reporting too, and that's a very good thing, certainly to a certain degree. But, you know, I would say that there has been some nuanced reaction from the press, from the public, excuse me, that suggests that they do, to a certain degree, see the verification process and sort of put some value on the steps involved with more traditional reporting and recognize the difference between that and the sort of more analysis or commentary kind of work that comes out elsewhere, whether it's on the line, you know, online or someplace else. But in addition, you have, as the caller mentioned, places like the BBC and, you know, places outside the U.S. And even news organizations themselves to go to for information. And that's a real competitor to news outlets that didn't used to exist. We see this in the coverage of the campaign. Many of the candidates have used their websites to announce their campaign, to launch their campaign, rather than holding a traditional, you know, sort of press conference on the front steps of town hall. They're announcing it online. That gives them more control over the message that they want to put out, and they're using their websites as well for a lot of grassroots activity, and as sort of a way to, if not augment the press, to either bypass them or at least sort of get their message out first before people covering them have a chance to sort of write the message for them.
But I'm wondering, Amy, what percentage of the American public avails themselves of those sources?
Well, it's not a huge percent, certainly, but it's growing, and it's creating an impact so that, you know, people find that they want to get armed with all kinds of different facts about whatever it is they're interested in, and they'll go to all different places to get that. Sometimes it might be a traditional news source, but if they can get the sort of a straight data table of exit poll results from the New York Times, fine. But if it's from you know, another website that's not from a traditional news organization, that's okay too. They just want to get to the information. Mm-hmm. So it's less about the brand. That's you know, one of the big things we talk about this year too, is that it is less about the brand. And it's more about getting the information you need.
Thanks, Rick, so much for your call. We go to Joe from Cottage Grove next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I just wanted to, referring to the last caller there, I would have to differ with his opinion about the media. I know there's a lot of lot of talk out there about the media having bias. There's people on the left and people on the right saying that they're, you know, the media is evil, and it kind of makes me laugh because I've worked I'm a newspaper guy, and I've worked in worked as editor and writer in newsrooms, and to think that there's some sort of greater power that's dictating their agenda within the newspaper organization or any media organization is ridiculous. I mean, I'm sure that there are you know, unique situations where that might happen. For the most part, newsrooms are made up of professional journalists that went to school. They learned the practice through their schooling. They learned to deliver unbiased news reporting. So it just kind of makes me laugh when I hear that, and it's kind of frustrating. But at the same time, I guess if you don't understand the inner workings of the media and how it works, then I guess I could understand how you could come up with those misconceptions. I do agree that you should not just rely on one news source, public radio, New York Times, Al Jazeera. Just a whole. You should take in several different news sources to get your information, and then you know, come up with your analysis from that. And that's important. I just wanted to say that. But my question, actually, my original question was kind of gets back to newspapers, and I was just wondering if the guests could talk about, and I think you guys have actually already touched on this a little bit, but the whole idea of the mid-sized newspapers like a Wisconsin State Journal, and then even this getting down to the community paper level, how are they going to work and survive in this new age of new media? Are they going to be? Are they going to? Do you see them transferring over completely to electronic news organizations? Kind of what the Cap Times has kind of gone to, or are they going to kind of just die off and just not be around anymore? And I'll go ahead and just take my answer off.
Thank you, Jill.
One of the things that's been growing is a partnership that Yahoo and Google separately are both creating with mid-sized newspapers and small newspapers. Yahoo has a new part on its website where it's trying to give you very local information that's connecting to you and your zip code. So when you put in your zip code, you can get, you know, the headlines and the links to all of these local stories. So the need for local information is going to remain, and as perhaps the providers become fewer, the ability to get local reporting is, you know, going to be even greater, because there's going to be, you know, greater distance between the people at Yahoo that are you know, putting the things up and that local community. So the need is still there. It certainly looks like the way that most of us will consume our news, in the next decade and or beyond, is going to be in some kind of electronic form. Who's creating that is a little less certain. But this idea of a big national aggregator creating a partnership with people at the local level certainly has a lot of possibilities behind it, and there are a lot of reasons to think that this could work. One of the biggest things that we saw, one of the sort of new activities in 2008, were all kinds of partnerships. News organizations looking for people to join with. In addition to partnerships with Yahoo and Google, we're seeing things at the local level where newspapers are creating a partnership with local agencies, so that the paper has the link to, you know, whether it's a local housing authority or a local education agency, that links them to data from that agency, and the agency carries the news reports about that subject area from the news organization on their website. So it's all about kind of partnerships and figuring out what unique thing you have to offer.
Mm-hmm. What's happening with nightly news? Are we still watching ABC, NBC, CBS?
Well, you know, they still command an incredible audience when you think about it in relationship to other news platforms, but it is dying. It's increasing, you know. Continuing to decrease year after year after year. A greater percentages each year, and the audience is getting older and older and older. So it really looks like it's just a matter of time before it's going to be gone. And when we asked our survey of journalists, you know, if how long they could sort of see nightly news lasting versus newspapers lasting, they clearly see the death of nightly news is coming first. But there's still it's a pretty big audience, and advertisers have kind of clung to the nightly newscast because they do see success there. People watch those ads. They're reaching a certain part of the public. It's not the age group that they would most want to hit, but the nightly news is it's bringing in money. So most people would sort of say it's a matter of time, but they're not gone yet.
They watch those ads and they're sick, right? Because almost all the ads are for people who have some kind of illness.
Well, they are targeting, the age group that's watching those, that's for sure.
Yeah. Chris is next from La Crosse. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I guess I was wondering if we could talk about some more options for better economic models for print media, because I'm fairly young, and I'm not one of the generation that grew up with the internet, but as soon as I got access to the internet, I jumped in head first. And I'm a really big believer in what it brings to our lives. And because of that, I'm a big believer in the concept of net neutrality, and therefore a concept like what was talked about earlier about charging providers to carry news organizations, to carry that media, I think is wrong, because obviously those costs would be passed on to the consumer, and then we would I would feel that we would end up with a hierarchy in the internet, which, I mean, I just totally disagree with. So I guess I was just wondering what some of the other ideas for economic models are to do this.
Well, I tell you, anybody would be happy to hear your idea if you
right.
had some.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's hard, and I certainly appreciate your point about the hierarchy. You know, I will say that if you look at news consumption online, you know, a point that I tried to make earlier is that in some ways there's a more of an oligarchy on the news online than there ever was in the traditional media. The traditional media outlets are controlling more of the news audience at this point. Yes, there's a lot more options out there. There's a plethora of places, an endless number of places you can go, but the bulk of where people are getting their information by wide margin is from a small number of news providers. So, you know, the question of who's going to be controlling information, you know, I think that occurs at several different levels, and it's not only one that has to do with, you know, with the economics of it. You know, that said, the question of advertising and the amount of revenue that can come from there is where the real issue lies, because, you know, we've already begun to see the decline, slowing down, I guess is a better way of putting it, of the growth of ad revenue online. You know, it grew by 26% overall. This is total ad revenue online last year versus 36% growth the year before. And news is already falling much further behind that. I mean, news only grew by 9-12% online. So, you know, the advertising model for money, it's a real problem. And you're right that people aren't used to paying for information, and the idea of needing to pay for it is something that, you know, you mentioned to people of it, sort of the younger generation, that, you know, 18 to 28-year-olds or whatever, about paying to get some piece of news, you know, forget it. I mean, why would we possibly do that? And yes, I'll pay for my iTunes download, and I'll pay for my, you know, coffee in the morning, and, you know, but pay for information, that doesn't make any sense to me. So, you know, it's going to be a struggle.
Yes.
And one of the things that was talked about at this conference that I popped into this week of newspaper editors was the need, and this was some sort of outside business people that were coming in and talking about their successes or failures in businesses, and the sense that there really needs to be some fresh, very creative blood put into the revenue and advertising and business side of news operations, and that there needs to be a lot of creative thinking about other options. Right now, that's kind of the most depressing side of a news operation is the business, is the advertising room. You go in there and there's just a sense of loss, of uncertainty, whereas you have creative ideas and some energy on the content side. We also did a look at the Madison Avenue, sort of the views of the ad agents themselves and the business side to say, well, you know, how do they see it? You know, do they see a brighter future? Do they have the answers? And what we found in this report was that they don't have any more ideas or sense of optimism than we're finding from the people on the business side inside the news operation.
Amy Mitchell is our guest this hour, Deputy Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. They have done an extensive look at American journalism in 2008. The report examines newspapers, online, network TV, cable TV, local TV, magazines, radio, and find overall that the state of the American news media in 2008 is more troubled than a year ago. The problems increasingly appear to be different than many experts predicted, and we've been talking about many of them this hour. We have one line open, 800-486-8655, or you can send us an email, talk@WPR.org. We'll get to an email in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, the air in Beijing and how it's going to affect the health of the athletes and the visitors to the Olympics. We go to email. Now, Amy, I'm a military veteran, and I was shocked at how the nuclear weapons transfers last August and in December, January were swept under the rug. This is an important subject, as are so many others that the press either ignores or sweeps under the rug with the broom of Britney Spears. The alternative press and the internet press developed because people decided to step up to the plate when they saw how the mainstream press was failing to do its job. That's from Carl LeMay in La Crosse. What do you say?
Well, you know, he certainly hits on a point here, which is the lack of international coverage. And not only, you know, U.S. interests abroad, but things that actually are going on outside of the U.S. and our direct involvement. There's really been a pulling back, and this has begun, you know, several years ago. We began to see this, and then sort of after 9/11, there was a resurgence in the kind of our awareness and coverage of other events. But what we find, by and large, is that the press will focus on one area internationally, and they've kind of put all of their resources to covering that one thing, and they don't really have the wherewithal to cover a lot of different foreign news events. So, you know, the last couple of years we've been hearing a lot about Iraq, you know, primarily the U.S. policy debate and things like that, and the daily activity on the ground in Iraq. But when it comes to other parts of the world, whether it's China or, you know, Afghanistan or other areas, there's almost nothing there. And the web, interestingly, in the online sites that we look at, which are those that are the top audience garnerers, Google and MSNBC and CNN.com and Yahoo and AOL, they're much more internationally focused than the press overall.
Mm-hmm.
So I there does seem to be a greater sense of internationalism on the web. Now, this is in their top story, sort of the things that they lead with. And part of this may have to do with the sense that, you know, you can fit a lot more on a page online than you can, you know, in your newscast or on the front page of your newspaper. So it's okay to lead with these foreign stories and not worry about losing your audience. You know, but, you know, there's also a more international audience that comes to your website. I mean, there's no boundaries there. So you're, you know, the range of the people that you're speaking to is much broader. At the same time, we have this conundrum of the public attitudes, which, as we mentioned earlier, is suggesting that, you know, you're giving us too much of this foreign stuff. Let me know what's going on back home. So, you know, it's not an easy decision at all times for these news organizations to be making.
Yeah. Marilyn from Gateport. Hi, Marilyn.
I guess I'm very disgusted with the quality of television. We call it the filth box. There's no way of getting around. The debate last night was a disgrace on the part of the people that were asking the questions. They weren't substantive. They were very trivial and sensational mongering. We turned it off.
Mm.
So I just think the quality of, except for public television, that is all right. But for regular television, it's sensationalism. I don't care about Kitty Bloom having a baby or an affair. but to repeat it as the main topic for the news lead every night is ridiculous.
Amy.
Well, we are finding that, talking about election coverage, that, the vast majority of what we find in the news is coverage of, what we sort of call the horse race, the who's up, the who's down, the who won yesterday, who lost yesterday. Even in coverage of debates that we have studied in past elections, we found that even in the debates themselves, the focus isn't on the issues. What did this candidate tell me about their health care policy? What are they going to do about education? It's about, how did he or she sound when she made that statement? I remember the focus on Gore's wardrobe, one of the debate rounds when he was running. So that is a tendency of the press, and much of the research that we've done continues to point to that year after year after year. And part of it, likely stemmed from this movement towards 24-hour news and then minute-by-minute news and the feel not only of needing to fill all of this time, but to also always have something new to say, so that when there's not a new fact, you end up repeating the fact that was already said
a few hours ago
or yesterday,
right.
and then adding your own little thing on top of it that's new, whether it's, analysis or just your opinion about what's going to happen. But there's a lot of repetition of fact. We did one study that looked at, we called it a day in the life of the news, and we sort of looked at over the course of 24 hours in kind of three different markets, if you were following the news, what would you learn? And the level of repetition, particularly on cable news, was incredible throughout the day because they were waiting for something to happen.
And they analyzed the same statement that's been made for a week sometimes. It's the same story for a week.
Right. And the other thing that happens is not only, it's repetition, it's things that get, driven in, and it's not new, and opinion comes out, but
right.
then there's also something lost. And that is the ability to step back and do a larger, broader look at everything together. So that it's, we call it sort of the incrementalization of reporting. It's piece by piece by piece by piece. And you don't ever get the whole deep picture thought out and even, analyzed. You move into analysis naturally as events, continue to evolve. But we don't get there. It's places like, The Economist, which is growing, quite significantly in economics and an audience, that do these long, deep, introspectives on one particular topic that they decide to look at that month. It's hard to find that very many places.
We are welcoming phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655. Your report does show, though, that cable news, as you say, has showed further signs of maturity after a year of losses. The medium regained viewers, especially at prime time. MSNBC, the greatest growth. Fox News enjoyed the least amount of growth, even as it remained the audience leader. So what's driving that?
Well, part of it's a political year. People are,
right.
are interested in following that. There's a real political audience for the cable shows. And we've also seen the cable networks this year, in the last year, sort of start to define themselves, differentiate themselves from each other. MSNBC has really openly, publicly identified itself as the place to come for politics. The politics network,
mm-hmm.
and they have grown both in audience and revenue much more so than we've seen in the last decade for them. And they're still pretty far behind Fox and CNN. And Fox tends to avoid certain questionable issues, but. So the audiences are becoming more niche. They bounced back this year, largely likely because of the political
right.
nature of the news
right.
this year. But they are facing some ceiling, some limits to how much they can grow, and the sense that they're starting to compete among each other more now than they are against newspapers or, you know, sort of the, you know, the other genres, and there's not as much natural growth. Part of what Fox's great steep increase has been from the last several years has been because they were just becoming available in certain in homes, in certain cable systems. Cable systems were still adding them to their mix. That has now, they are now in almost all cable systems. So that natural growth, as we call it, is not going to continue, and they're going to have to now get new audiences, you know, within all the spectrums that they already existed. And that's a lot harder to get, of course.
Yeah. Amy, thank you so much. What a thorough report. What a thorough, wonderful report. Thank you for putting this all together.
Thank you.
Amy Mitchell, Deputy Director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. I highly recommend that you read it. It covers so much. And if you go to the web, just go to www.journalism.org, and you'll be able to get this report, which is very, very extensive. Thank you, Rhonda Fanning, for producing the hour. Thank you, John Treader, for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. I'm sorry we had tons of emails, tons of calls, just not enough time. We'll be on the topic again in the not-too-distant future. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.